put 50,000 candy money in the slot.
$300 Quaker, probably in the slot.
They steal it or they turn it to change.
Okay, I'm on the northbound actor. Trying to lie.
Look, I think, Carl, what the hell can they do? And I think we can set it up again.
If you like what you hear, go to ganglandwire.com. We need you to put a hit out on our donate button. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/ganglandwire. Follow true crime storyteller Gary Jenkins on Twitter at Jinx Law. Buy the DVD Gangland Wire or download the Kansas City Mob Tour app. And now, here's Gary Jenkins.
Good evening, folks. We're back here for the third and final episode of Murder in McHenry. I'm here with my good friend and co-host, Aaron. Say hello, Aaron.
Hello, Aaron.
We also have our special guest, true crime author and a person who lived this story himself, Paul Scharf. Say hello, Paul.
How you guys doing? Hi, Gary. Hi, Aaron.
Thanks for being here, Paul. I really appreciate your time.
Oh, it's my privilege to be here.
Paul's father was killed June 2nd, 1981, and it's been a cold case for 27 years. And he stumbled across the name of the person who killed his father in a true crime book. And that's been what we've been talking about for the last two episodes, about Frank Collado, who's one of Tony Sparatro's henchmen out in Las Vegas. And the actual suspect who killed Paul's father was a man named Larry Newman. They called him Lurch after the character in the Addams Family.
Who was named in the murder 27 years later by the police.
Right. Frank Collado went in the witness protection program, was going to testify. Actually, he was going to testify against Tony Sparatro, and then Tony Sparatro got killed himself. Frank's in the witness protection program, and he's supposed to tell all, and he tells the FBI about this Larry Newman going to Chicago and doing a murder. Now, Frank didn't know the name of the person he'd killed, but he described the circumstances. It was a bar owner and a lady who worked at the bar in a bar in suburban Chicago late at night. And they took it to the McHenry County people, figured out where it was, where Larry Newman was from McHenry County, from this immediate area, knew people there. They take it to the local sheriff up there, and the sheriff does nothing.
Denies Freedom Information Request Acts twice.
After we got Larry Newman named as the murderer of my father under exceptional status, through the second investigation that occurred in 2008 and 2009, I started to write a book about that experience, and my co-author on my behalf went ahead and requested my father's file through the Freedom of Information Act. He was shot down not once, but twice, and both times very rudely in a very unwelcoming manner. We continued to go ahead and write the book. About the time that the book was being released, it was a year prior to the McHenry County Sheriff election. The second investigator of my father's case at the time was Lieutenant Zanke. Well, now he is Under Sheriff Zanke. And I'm seeing a pattern here because the first investigator of my father's case was George Hendel, and then he became Sheriff Hendel. With my experience with Andrew Zanke, there was no way that I felt that this guy was competent enough to be the sheriff of McHenry County. So I started getting involved with the release of my book, and I started writing articles. And what I was going to do is I was going to file a Freedom of Information Act for my father's case. When I did it, and this was like almost 3 years later, when I did it, they gave it to me. And when I got most of the information, I didn't get all the information, but in the case file, I was able to connect George Hendel, the original investigator. I was able to connect him to the Chicago outfit through newspaper articles, some FBI telex reports. And in the newspaper articles, it was very odd. This newspaper article goes back to 1982 when Frank Collada turned. And this article wasn't released in Chicago. It was released in Las Vegas. And it was through Adam Bourgeois. Adam Bourgeois is a Chicago outfit attorney. And what's funny is that he's remarking on anything at all because basically he shouldn't have known that any of this stuff took place. Because we had McHenry County come out to San Diego, because that's where Frank Collado was being held by the FBI at that time in the San Diego prison. George Hendel and the McHenry County state's attorney traveled to San Diego, and they interviewed Frank. And nothing came out of it. There was no charges that were going to be filed, nothing. So it should have been kept quiet because Frank Collado is a government witness. So who wound up speaking was Adam Bourgeois, the Chicago Outfit's attorney. And in this newspaper article, what he said was that George Hendel fed misinformation to Frank Collado. And Frank Collado collaborated on this false information.
So they were trying to discredit Frank Collado.
That's correct.
And George Hendel has the FBI. If you look into the FBI reports, you'll find they have a connection with the Chicago mob and the sheriff, George Hendel.
Yeah, that is correct, because what came out of this newspaper article, because Adam Bourgeois was actually representing Larry Newman at that time. So what he was saying is George Hendel fed Frank Collado misinformation, and Frank collaborated on that. Plus, he also had 3 lie detector tests on Glenn. And he said in the papers that Glenn failed those 3 lie detector tests. Glenn was the alternative suspect in my father's murder.
So they want to put it on to Glenn, the alternate
right.
suspect, who was the boyfriend of the other lady that got killed.
Right.
But
and we don't want it to fall on Larry Newman.
And the mob has an interest in that. Chicago mob has an interest in Larry Newman not taking a hit on that because it makes them look bad. They don't like that bad publicity.
Right, because Frank Collado would have provided that information. Larry Newman gets prosecuted. That information came from Frank Collado. Frank Collado is now credible in a double homicide. Now more cases are going to come up. That would have kind of gave him going into those next cases kind of like a snowball going down the hill, building momentum.
Right.
So the Chicago outfit didn't want that.
They discredit him with the Larry Newman case. Then when he testifies against Tony Sparatro, then they bring that sheriff in and say, well, you investigated this case based on Frank Culotta's information, and he gave you bad information. Is that not correct? And say, yes, sir, you're right. And there you go. Frank Culotta,
exactly
anything
it.
He would say about Tony Sparatro would be a suspect from there on out.
So in the same article, it says Adam Bourgeois, the Chicago office attorney who's representing Larry Newman, that they were going to call George Hendel as a character witness in Larry's murder case on a different murder, the murder of Robert Brown, the jeweler. So the guy that's supposed to be going after Larry Newman for the murder of my father is now going to go ahead and testify on behalf of this already convicted triple murderer for a different murder.
To stand up
it's absolutely bizarre.
To stand up and say that he is a stand-up guy.
That's right. That's right. Here is time he was an investigator, but he, like I said, he did become a sheriff later. But here's this investigator, here's this law enforcement, and this Frank Collado is a liar, and he's going to tell you about defending the guy that he actually should be prosecuting for my father's murder.
And part of that is because the McHenry County Sheriff's Department or people in there were really shielding the Chicago outfit.
That's correct.
They may have had some intimate knowledge to the fact that, like, Frank was aware that Larry had gone back out to Chicago. He sent a nephew with him.
That's correct. And because I had most of the case file, I had those 3 lie detector tests. The first lie detector test was given, and it was considered inconclusive. And that was due to giving Glenn a lie detector test shortly after finding out that his girlfriend was killed. The second lie detector test was given, and it found him be misleading. So it was a positive. Third lie detector test was given, and it found him to be truthful. So you had an inconclusive, a positive lie, and a lie detector test that was truthful.
You can throw all those out.
That all, Yeah, one, you don't give that many lie detector tests.
Right.
Two, you add them all up together and you come to zero. You got the first and conclusive one, that's a zero. You got the first one that showed that he was lying or misleading, that'd be 1 point, but the second one showed him to be truthful. So that takes that 1 point away. And these were the reasons why George Hendel said, we don't need to look at any more suspects. We've got our guy. And so then I got into a telex report because George Hendel was actually subpoenaed for the Tony Spilotro trial. And this was Tony Spilotro trial for the Bertha's burglary. And that is the hole-in-the-wall gang was caught on the 4th of July in 1981 trying to break into this fancy jewelry store, this high-end furniture jewelry store.
Well, why would they call George Hendel on that? Why would he know about that?
Well, because they were going to go ahead and prove that Frank Collada was a not credible, just a mob lying guy that serves his own interests. He went ahead and called a phony murder back in McHenry County.
Okay.
Here's the sheriff to tell you about it.
All right, I got that now. That's what I thought, but I wanted to make sure. So fast forward to this Lieutenant Zemke is now investigating the murder, and he runs for sheriff. Is that where we're headed?
That's correct. So he's now running for sheriff in McHenry County. He was replacing a guy named Sheriff Nygren, Keith Nygren, who was, I think he was the sheriff for, I don't know, 17 years, something like that. I didn't want to see that. You know, here's a second investigator who's climbing through the ranks after touching my father's case that did very little with the case and then treated me absolutely poorly. I mean, because I would call Zanke and trying to get an update on what's going on. It got so bad that I had to call Channel 5 News again and let them know, hey, I don't know what's going on. They're not calling me back. It took Channel 5 News giving Zanke a call for him to give me a call. I knew a lot about my home community. I knew a lot about the McHenry County Sheriff's Office. I knew that that place was on the take. When I started getting involved and I was going to start telling my story to go ahead and influence the election, there was already some things going on in play that I wasn't aware of. And it started off with a deputy who was terminated by Keith Nygren. What this deputy was claiming, he was claiming that they were profiling Mexicans in McHenry County. And he took it to his commanders. His commanders did nothing about it. So then he took it to the FBI. And then once the FBI got involved, McHenry County Sheriff got upset and terminated this deputy. So now this deputy starts bringing this case of wrongful termination against the sheriff's office. And so he went ahead and was disposing different people, and he started disposing this other deputy, Deputy Scott Millman. Deputy Millman happened to be the sheriff's bag man. What they didn't know at that time was he turned, and he was wearing a wire. So in the deposition, he was coming up with all different kinds of things about the sister police department in Mexico that McHenry County had a relationship with. That was just a front to run illegals and drugs back into McHenry County. He also stated that the sheriff asked him to put a hit out on a judge who passed away of natural causes, put a hit out on a coroner's candidate named Dave Bachman. There was illegal horse track racing. There was children that were chained up in basements in foster care. All different kinds of things started coming out about the corruption in the McHenry County Sheriff's Office. So we wound up with myself telling my story through my blog, one of the deputies used to have a blog, and then there was two other political blogs that were focused on McHenry County, and one of them happened to be the largest political blog in the whole state of Illinois. And so all these different blog sites were telling different stories, but you would thought that they were working in conjunction with each other, but they weren't. They were just telling stories about the McHenry County Sheriff's Office and the corruption that was going on. And Andrew Zanke, he got himself in trouble. He made my job kind of easy. While he was running for his election, a deputy made an allegation against Andrew Zanke. That deputy was working with the DEA, and they were working on a drug case. The drug case involved a gentleman named Brian Goodman. He owned the Rita Corporation, and these were the trucks that were being used to drive pot from Texas back to McHenry County. Brian Good also sits on the Mayor Commission. The Mayor Commission is a commission set up for the McHenry County Sheriff's Office, so when deputies are getting promoted and that type of thing, they go before the Mayor Commission. So Brian Good came into Undersheriff Sankey's office, and Undersheriff Sankey told him that there was an investigation on his Rita Corporation. The deputy found out about that, and this got into the papers, and it turns out that the headquarters for the Rita Corporation, where the marijuana was suspected to be dropped off at, was also Zanke's campaign headquarters. Zanke he was creating his own mess, not only being attached to Sheriff Nygren, who was also being vilified in public opinion as being a very corrupt sheriff, and he was the heir apparent to Sheriff Nygren. Zanke was getting himself with trouble like that. He couldn't go to parades without flipping people off and getting caught doing that, and that getting picked up in the Chicago Tribune. So I just hammered on him.
I bet.
Through my articles.
Who was running against him? Did you support somebody?
Yeah, because if there's a corrupt sheriff in office, there's another sheriff who is then being, supported and nominated to continue the corruption. Who's going to step into that mess?
Right. So what I found out was, basically, I started calling this the regime, because it wasn't Nygren by himself. It wasn't Zanke by himself. But it was a whole corruption apparatus. There was attorneys. There was judges. The Northwest Herald, the local paper, they were friends with the regime. So I started hammering on the regime. And my objective really wasn't to support anybody, but it was to definitely not support Zanke and make people aware. This is McHenry County. I'm from there. Corruption is rampant all through McHenry County. So I didn't want to put myself in a position of saying this guy's corrupt and then go support some other corrupt guy. But what wound up happening, though, is a lot of deputies from the McHenry County Sheriff's Office was supporting me and buying my book. And they were reaching out to me behind the scenes. Not only was I surprised, but they kept on mentioning Bill Prim. Bill Prim. That was the gentleman that was running against Undersheriff Andrew Zanke for the sheriff's office. They were both Republicans, and they were running for the Republican nomination. So for us, The race really was the Republican nomination, because only one of them was going to get it. And Bill Prim, he was a former commander in the Des Plaines Police Department. If you're from Illinois, you know Des Plaines is a very large city, one of the largest cities outside of the Chicago, right outside of Chicago, in the Chicagoland area. And he was also a resident of McHenry County for 20 years. And so I had all these deputies telling me about Bill Prim. That's who they were supporting. So I started looking into Bill Prim. He was an outsider that really wasn't an outsider. He was part of the community for 20 years. And I got the idea that he understood what was going on. That's when I reached out to Bill Prim's campaign, and that's when I pledged my support to Bill Prim. So then I started hammering on Zanke, and I started supporting Bill Prim. throughout the election.
So I got the feeling that Bill Prim may have won that sheriff's election.
He ultimately did. He won the Republican nomination. We beat Sankey by 97 votes, I believe.
Wow, it was close one then.
Yeah, it was. And the Chicago Tribune was picking up on this race in McHenry County. It was very heated. It was very contentious. I was in the middle of it. And I'm trying to be cool and not let my emotions run away with me because I'm in the public. I couldn't be absolutely myself. Chicago Tribune, actually, after we won the Republican nomination, did an article interviewing the McHenry County State's Attorney, Lou Bianchi, and Bill Prim at the time. Tribune asked, did the bloggers, referring to myself, the two political blog sites, and the blog site of that former deputy, do you think that they had influence? And, of course, we did. We won by 97 votes.
Oh, yeah, and that close of election, anything like that would make a difference.
Yeah, usually
anybody
the fix is
let
in.
Off the gas.
Yeah, the fix is in.
The fix is already in, so you beat him by 97 votes. Somebody didn't count right.
Really?
Well, I actually, it's funny that you mentioned the fix, because I was watching the precincts as they were reporting. There's things that don't move in big swings. None of this was moving in big swings. Pretty much trends, when it starts from the beginning, what it trends at the beginning, it trends throughout the whole thing. And then we got to this one precinct, and I remember, and all of a sudden we had this 300-vote anomaly to Zanke. And I was like, oh, damn, the fix is in. And I think there is something there. But they didn't put in the fix hard enough. They needed a 400 vote fix.
Yeah,
they only put in a 300 vote fix.
They didn't need to win it by a lot. They just needed to win it by a little.
Right.
That's right. That's right. And they lost it by 97.
So after sheriff got in, did he go back and take a look at anything? Did he uncover anything? Or did he just kind of like get rid of some people left and
new boss, same as the old boss?
Well, what happened was, okay, so he became the Republican nominee. He still had to win the race the election in November to become sheriff. So for us, the nomination was the big election, but to actually become sheriff was the election in November. He went ahead and he won. And when he got into office, there was a lot of things that were going on. Leading up to that election, there was a lot of shredding that was going on in the McHenry County Sheriff's Office. Like I said, it was a corrupt administration that was there. It was for decades. The corruption in McHenry County goes back decades, possibly even a full century. So there was a lot of misinformation that was given by the sheriff about, like, the jail, for instance, that it was a moneymaker. But we could never get the money, the numbers from the sheriff. It turned out that it wasn't a moneymaker at all. Sheriff Prim had to deal with all that stuff. There were some budget things that were signed before he went into office, which made him forced to reduce some of the staffing of the deputies and whatnot. So, in a way, he cleaned house. So, you created this culture of basically most of the deputies to go along to get along. You got a few guys want to play because they see injustice as a way to move to the top. And then you got some real bad players involved in that. So those are the kind of three groups that you have in the deputy's office. So when Bill got in, it really was, everybody I'm sure was scared, wondering what was going to happen next. I think with the culture and the environment that he created, they just had monkeys jumping off their back and they really didn't know why. They didn't have to go along to get along anymore. Now they were going to do real police work. Now that, you see these bad characters getting promoted to the top, that stuff was going to end. So it was a huge morale boost after a couple months for Bill Prim to get into office. It was a big morale boost for the deputy.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, I tell you what, Paul, that is one heck of a story. I knew it would be a good one. I told Aaron, I said, this is a story. This is one heck of a story.
Amazing story.
Amazing story.
Yeah, and there's a lot of details that come along with this story, too, that it's hard to go over, even when you do three segments.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I know. People got to get the book. You got to get this book to get all the details. We've kind of glossed over it in about an hour and a half's time, and it's a heck of a book.
Do you stay in contact with Holly, the babysitter who first kind of brought this forward to you?
I do. Very little. You have to understand Holly. Holly is, if you were to meet her, you would think, oh, she's a very beautiful girl. She's very sweet and kind, but she is a warrior. But she's a humble warrior, and she doesn't like to be in the limelight of stuff. So when she was on the cover of the Chicago Sun-Times, and then I put her on the cover of my book, she did it. She did it with her teeth gritted together. But that's not really her. She's a good person, a wonderful person. I owe a lot to Holly, but she doesn't like the limelight.
What about Denny Griffin? You talk to him anymore much? I haven't talked to Denny quite a while. I need to get in touch with him.
I just recently been talking to him. He's bringing back Crime Wire.
I saw that.
So we're going to be hearing about some new great shows from Denny. What's great about all this stuff is, it's been very interesting and emotional for me in all different kinds of ways. And, I've had a lot of fun along the way, and Gary can attest to this himself, doing MobCon and stuff like that, and meeting the public and telling stories. It's been a lot of fun. And everybody that I've met along the way, this journey for me started back in 2008. This is 8 years now that I've been on this journey. I'm friends with everybody I met along the way still.
Cool. That's great. It's a heck of a story, Paul. You got anything else there, Aaron?
Well, I just want to make sure that people know your website.
My website is McHenryCounty1981.com, and that's McHenry County1981.com. On my website, you'll see radio shows, pictures, old newspaper articles, the blogs that I was writing, hammering on the sheriff's office, hammering on Zanke, articles about the Chicago outfit. So if you're a mob enthusiast, definitely check out my website. And then, of course, go ahead and get my book. My book is Murder McHenry, and that can be found on Amazon, both soft cover and in Kindle.
All right. Thank you. Paul. I think we're done, aren't we, Aaron?
All right, public service announcement.
Public service. One last public service announcement out of this three-episode set. If you have a friend or relative, a loved one who has a problem with drugs or alcohol, any kind of addiction, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, as we used to say, make your first call to First Call, 816-361-5900. Or if you're not from the Kansas City area and you need to find out about resources for folks with addiction problems, go to their website, www.firstcallkc.org. And I appreciate your kind attention out there. We will be editing these shows over the next week or so.
You may not actually get them up before the 31st of March.
I will not get them up before the 31st of March. I still have a third episode from the 51st Street Crips, three-episode set, and I have two episodes about the two mob guys who traveled to London, England, and stole the Marlboro Diamond. That's a heck of a story, folks. So just keep coming back, and we'll keep bringing you these great stories.
And keep going off and giving us a review.
And give us a review on iTunes,
Give us a review. And maybe if nothing else, you could already support the program by hitting a donate.
Right. And then if you hit the $25 one, why, I'll send you a copy of my DVD, or I might send you a T-shirt if you want one, as long as you're in the United States.
If you're outside the United States.
If you're outside the United States, I have an idea. I think we're going to make some premium podcasts. We will send you a premium podcast. We'll be making those up over the next few months and selling some extra podcasts for probably $1.99 is what some of the other people do. And we'll send you one of those premium podcasts.
Trying to think of anything else. Oh, in July, aren't we going to the Kansas City Public Library?
We hope. We don't know yet.
Still no date?
See, here's what I'm doing, Aaron.
You're writing a book.
I'm writing a book, and I'm trying to, and I'll put together a program out of that book. Well, right now I am halfway done with the book. My editor's got the first half of it, and she's going to get back to me sometime in the next week or two, and then I'll know really how to proceed with the second half, and I'll have to go back and make her change her suggested changes in the first half. So, and as I when I get the book done, it's going to be about the skim in Las Vegas from the Kansas City viewpoint, what the Kansas City people talked about, and we know that because we listened to them talk about it the whole time that they were talking about it. And I'll do a PowerPoint presentation, and we'll do a program down at Kansas City Library.
In July.
In July. Sometime. I don't know when. They told me that if I come up with something, both in July or August this summer at the Kansas City Library and also in the Clark County Library, I'll go back out there in next January.
In January for Mob History Month.
Right.
And also remember to download Gary's app, Kansas City Mob Tours, and you can take a tour of noted mob locations around Kansas City.
And I just added some more on there, so download my app and take a look. And I keep adding more locations all the time. All right. Good night, Paul.
Good night, Gary. Good night, Aaron.
Good night. Thank you.
Music provided by Automatic. Check them out at automaticmusic.com.